Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Eric Thornton, commodity specialist here at McKinney Flavelle, filling in for MC Mike Coughlin today on this beautiful midsummer day of July 16th, 2021. And welcome to this edition of our Hot Commodity Podcast. And today I am joined with the one and only Sean Bingham, our Director of Risk Management here at McKinney Flavelle. Hello, Sean.
Good afternoon, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. And as I mentioned here, we're kind of in the middle of summer and people going on vacations and such and getting out and about. I hope everyone's staying safe and sound with family and friends. But
our entire office is out.
Yeah, I know.
Think about this, Eric. We're the two most recent employees for
McKinney Flavelle,
and they have given us complete reign of the podcast today.
That is very true.
It's very brave of them because we could probably talk about the Buffalo Bills and football in general for the next 30 minutes.
I could talk about that as long as we had daylight pretty much.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. They're like, oh, yeah, we trust these two guys. Let them talk about whatever they want.
Yeah, so, the new guys, here you go. Take it over, our beautiful podcast. And
look, as long as it's not soccer, I'm fine.
Right.
As long as we're not talking about soccer. Sorry, Mike. Yeah. Sorry, Mike. I played soccer in high school, college. I love to play the game. Mm-hmm. I hate watching the game. So, don't ask me any questions about international soccer.
Yeah. Don't worry. You won't get that from me. But I'm not hosting now 2 out of the last 3 weeks. So, man, I think the new guys here are starting to take over this podcast. So
is it that, or do they just not want to do it anymore? It could be that too.
It could be that. But hey, I know we're going to have a great show today. And what we have planned for everybody is we're going to give a little bit of a focus here today on wheat and start with me and giving a little bit of a fundamental overview and what's changed. Obviously, a lot of things to cover with WASDE coming out Monday and some outlook on the look ahead for wheat as a whole. But Sean's going to go over more of the technicals perspective and give us some flavor there. But before I get into the episode today, I just want to get a quick promotion out there of our Hot Ingredients webinar. This is scheduled to be on July 28th at 2:00 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. And for those that are proud partners of McKinney, you likely got your first invite for this great webinar yesterday. But for those that may not have received that, check out our website, McKinney-Flavelle.com. All the details will be there for registration. But we're really looking forward to this one. This is kind of a newer webinar for us, and we're going to be highlighting a couple of the hottest new ingredients out there in the food and beverage market. So be sure to check that out.
A whole new series for us on new or hot ingredients. So should be interesting.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. I'm excited. I'll be presenting along with Mike and one of our colleagues in info services, Stephen Hasbrook. So it'll be his first time on a webinar, and he's a great analyst, and he'll have some awesome great insights. So we'll look forward to that. But like I said, we'll go ahead and get into wheat. And again, I'll start here with more of the fundamental updates. And boy, did we ever have some updates Monday. And for those that listened into the Monday WASDE recap, I provided some of those changes. And I won't go into the line item by line item changes per se, but I'll just kind of highlight on the major updates that are affecting the market at play currently. And essentially, the USDA made a pretty bold statement in regards to the concerns that we've been highlighting and talking about in the Northern Plains being very dry and the spring wheat crop especially suffering from dryness. We saw that USDA took down production by just about 10%, going from 50.7 bushels per acre for yield down to 45.8 bushels per acre. So quite a sizable drop in production. And again, with spring wheat really pulling down that total wheat harvested number, and thus productions falling quite dramatically from just under 1.9 billion bushels all the way down to 1.746 billion bushels. So pretty sizable production drop, and just kind of picking apart a little bit more individually of that number. Again, we mentioned the hard red spring wheat having really a difficult time this year with the dryness, and some of the crop potential looks really poor up there. And it's being reflected now in the numbers here, with production looking at currently stated at 305 million bushels for hard red spring wheat. That's in comparison to last year at 530 million bushels. So I think, you know, in my opinion, there is some room still to trim that lower. And we could be looking at a scenario where we are potentially 50% less in terms of production for spring wheat, falling likely under 300 million bushels. So pretty, pretty stark contrast there. And the two classes, when comparing the spring wheat versus that of the hard red winter and soft red winter varieties, where stocks are definitely shrinking for hard red winter marginally, from 426 million bushels last year to 369 million bushels projected for 21-22, but actually a slight increase to the soft red winter wheat stocks, looking at 105 million bushels versus that of 85 million bushels last crop year. And that's mostly attributed to the increase in acreage we saw for the winter wheat varieties this past year. And again, we bounced up to 46.7 million total planted acres. But spring wheat, definitely going to be a tough year, and not looking very good here in the near term for any weather relief or any optimism for some yield recovery. The northern plains are roasting and very toasty, and look to get, you know, pushing well above 100 degrees starting this week and weekend, and look to be very dry as well. So those crops that have been just reeling up there with very poor conditions, doesn't look to recover in any way here the next 10 to 14 days, maybe longer. So that is really the biggest play here in the United States that we're watching, is continued focus on the weather and the development of the spring wheat crop. But the winter wheat crops are going through harvest currently and seeing some good yield numbers right now, a little bit lower on the protein side of things, but yields that are above, you know, 52, 53 bushels per acre on average. So looking to be well attainable to hit the current production estimates there for both hard red and soft red winter. But, you know, the U.S. is kind of dragging down, switching now quickly to the global balance sheet, is kind of dragging down the global outlook for wheat for 21-22. So there's still record production estimated at 792 million metric tons. But again, we saw a sizable reduction from the U.S. outlook, and China was also revised a little bit lower by 2 million metric tons on Monday's WASD. And then the some other modifications, a little bit up, a little bit down. Canada's trimmed a little bit lower by 500,000 metric ton. And that was just slightly offset, those reductions, by some increases for Australia, notably going up 1.5 million metric tons. The EU was massaged up a little bit, as well as the Ukraine was pushing now up 500,000 metric tons. So all in all, ending stocks are looking to fall based on, again, really the U.S. being the major revision downward. So we're projected 296.8 million metric tons in the June WASD. And as of Monday, we are down roughly 5 million metric tons to just over 291 total million metric tons. So still plenty of wheat in the global market. But ultimately, you know, we'll see how the next few months of weather pan out for not only here in the U.S., which, you know, I could still envision some lower production estimates and bringing down ending stocks here domestically, but also, you know, keeping an eye out on Russia and Ukraine, which has started to hint at some dryness also creeping back in, and just kind of monitoring total production and, you know, domestic feed and demand as we finish or progress through the 21-22 crop here. But it looks to be that, you know, ending stocks will still be very comfortable historically considering. And, you know, I think really the big thing now is, you know, for those that are in the KC or Chicago contracts, I think there's some more patience and flexibility, at least for coverage opportunities. I would say prior to WASD was certainly a moment that I would be suggesting, or I was suggesting, for coverage into next year in the early part of 22, with KC futures kind of breaking just below that $6 per bushel handle and Chicago wheat kind of grinding close to the low sixes. You know, that's going to be a good fundamentally justified price range this year. And really the antithesis, though, for Minneapolis and spring wheat is we've just been on a tear upwards. And again, I think Sean's going to hint on this a little bit more specifically on Minneapolis, but coverage opportunities, at least in the next couple months, are likely just going to be taking advantage on a down day or two. And ultimately, though, I don't see a whole lot of relief for pricing here in the next 6 to 9 months for Minneapolis prices. So likely to remain firm, in my opinion, just based on the fundamentals at play. So yeah, if there's anything folks want to speak on further fundamentally, happy to do that. But that's what I'm seeing out there right now. Sean, what are your comments?
I think one thing, you know, Eric and I had a call this morning with a client. And if you're not a client, become a client. Give us a call. But we had a conversation about wheat this morning, and you made a good point about the WASD that I didn't think about. And that was how fast the USDA changed their forecast. I think that was key. I think everyone was expecting revisions to WASD, mm-hmm. but I think you hit the nail on the head on how quickly they did it this year. And they're not waiting. they're not waiting to see what the weather looks like. Right. I mean, it's hot and it's going to stay hot. And I think jumping the gun is really what sent the market up. And technically, to just kind of jump right back in that, you're right. This is the tale of two different wheat contracts. You know, spring wheat is on fire. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what the technical indications are there. It is up, up, and away. Something I find interesting about spring wheat contract is we've had some cycles. You know, we go up, we cycle back a little, and we go up and make new highs. We've had about four or five of these cycles. But what's noticeable about them is they're getting shorter every time. So fewer days between each pullback and new high. And to me, that's an indication of increased momentum and an accelerating trend. So we've already climbed above the high water mark that we saw in 2017 for the nearby contract in spring wheat, which would really project prices up to around 1040, 1050. Mm-hmm. And that's levels that we were looking at back in 2012 and before that 2010. So something interesting to watch there. Now on the winter wheat side, completely different story. Our models are still bearish to neutral those contracts. Now, we're having a pretty good rally today and we are on the verge of tipping those. But even if our model triggers go neutral to bullish, it's really more of a neutral outlook for those contracts. And I think opportunities to take coverage in winter wheat are not exhausted by any stretch. And like you said, our Chicago model gave us a signal darn near on that July. Well, actually, it was on the July 12th low before we took off here recently. But yeah, I wouldn't count out getting opportunities for more coverage in winter wheat. Spring wheat certainly on its own. One thing noticeable about looking at that past track record is, and we talked about this a little bit this morning, was the difference between the spread between winter wheat and spring wheat. And back in 2010, 2012, this spread there really wasn't much of a spread. So what you had in that situation was wheat, the whole asset class was rallying and, got up above $10 and, nearly above $11 as well. But the winter wheat classes were following right along with it until they started to fade. And then winter kind of led the break. Back in 2017, when we saw prices spike up to near 880, winter wheat wasn't in that rally. So the spreads got really wide, in the $2.50 range, which is exactly the same thing we're seeing now, although prices are slightly higher. And the big difference between those two periods was in 2010 and 2012, it took a lot longer for prices to retrace all the way back down to kind of their original levels. In 2017, we saw a much sharper reaction lower right away, although it still took, 8 to 9 months before prices got back down under, under six bucks. But I do think that's something to watch because, anyone that can replace spring wheat with winter wheat of any in any nature at all is going to be doing that at, at a $2.50 spread.
Right.
And the other thing that I follow a lot is speculator interest. And this is really amazing because speculator interest in wheat peaked in January of this year at, I want to say it was right around 120, it was about 117,000 net long contracts. Well, today, and I'm talking about all three wheat contracts, today we're under 30. I mean, this is as of the 6th. We'll get more information this afternoon. We're only at 35,000 contracts net long. 6,500 in Chicago, 18,000 in KC, and about 10,000 in spring wheat. So speculators really don't have a lot of interest in this rally. And maybe that'll change. But, I mean, we know speculators rarely play the spring wheat contract to begin with. The Chicago contract is always, or I should say, almost always the more heavily traded contract. But we're just not seeing that interest. And if we don't see some spec interest, I'd kind of be surprised if we can really push this market well above the levels that we saw in 2010 and 2012. So I kind of feel like, is there more room on the high side? Yes, there is. Mm-hmm. Is it probably limited? I think it probably is unless speculators get involved. And like you said, global stocks are not a problem. And the problem here is in the United States. And so, again, it may be one of those things. We just have to close our eyes and wait for some of these prices to come back down. Every market gets exhausted at some point, and I don't think we've seen that yet in the spring wheat contract, but probably getting pretty close. That's kind of my technical thoughts on the whole thing.
Awesome. Yeah, no, those are some great insights and very educational. Looking back in history as well, I didn't take a peek at some of those charts and graphs, but like you said, we did speak with a client this morning and some of that came up. But yeah, great insights. Thank you very much, Sean.
No problem. We got at least hopefully gave some insight in wheat today for some folks because it's if it wasn't on your radar 2 weeks ago, it is today.
That's for sure. Yeah. And we're not out of it yet. We still have plenty of time to go in the growing season. And, I think with that, obviously, feel free to reach out to us at any time with your local McKinney rep. Or like Sean mentioned, if you're not a client, just let us know. Reach out. We'd love to talk with you on these markets and help you with your strategy and purchasing decisions. So I think with that, though, Sean, we'll go ahead and wrap this podcast up today. And just want to thank everybody for listening in. And as Mike always says, live with an attitude of gratitude. Enjoy every moment with your family and friends. And until next week, take care, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everyone.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favel's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favel.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.